From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, New York City says it will retrain its police force after a controversial police action led to the death of an unarmed black man. Russia's president accuses the West of wanting to carve up his country, and Somali militant group Al-Shabaab claims it shot down a Kenyan plane. I'm Michael Lippin. New York says it's going to retrain its police force after a white officer was cleared of any criminal wrongdoing for holding an unarmed black man in a fatal chokehold earlier this year. Mayor Bill de Blasio announced the retraining program for the city's 20,000-member force on Thursday. He said it was essential that people of all races are treated equally by the police. A day earlier, a grand jury decided not to indict the officer, Daniel Pantaleo, for his fatal chokehold on the 43-year-old man, Eric Garner, in July. U.S. civil rights leaders condemned the grand jury decision. The death of Garner is one of several recent actions by white policemen that have led to the deaths of blacks under questionable circumstances. New York City's Manhattan district was relatively quiet on Thursday after a night of protests in which critics of the grand jury decision blocked the streets and bridges. One worker in the area told VOA that he has mixed feelings about the outcome of the Garner case.
Well, first of all, it's an absolute tragedy. There's no winners here. However, I have to respect the decision of the grand jury. We're a nation of laws, and there's a system in place to look at the evidence and determine a way forward. In this case, the grand jury took a very close look at the evidence, and in my humble opinion, they probably made a very good decision.
Well, in the Garner incident, the 43-year-old was arguing with several police officers who were arresting him for allegedly selling untaxed cigarettes. After several minutes, Pantaleo grabbed Garner from behind in a chokehold and forced him down to the sidewalk. Pantaleo issued a statement Wednesday saying he felt very bad about the death of Mr. Garner and never attempted to hurt anyone. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula has threatened to kill an American hostage unless the U.S. government meets its unspecified demands within 3 days. In a video posted on Thursday, a man who calls himself Luke Summers says he is certain that his life is in danger. "I am looking for any help that can get me out of this situation," he said. A British-born U.S. citizen, the 33-year-old Summers was captured by gunmen in Sana'a more than a year ago. He had been working for several years as a photojournalist in Yemen. Russian President Vladimir Putin has used an annual speech to legislators and officials to accuse Western nations of using the crisis in Ukraine to contain his country's progress. VOA's Daniel Scharf reports from Moscow.
The Russian president lashed out Thursday at the United States and its European allies. Vladimir Putin said Western sanctions for Russia's annexation of Crimea were just an excuse to weaken the country. He says the sanctions are not just a reaction of the United States and their allies over Russia's response to the events and coup in Ukraine. He says he is certain if all this did not take place, the West would come up with another reason to contain Russia's growing capabilities. Daniel Scherf, Moscow.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov exchanged sharp comments about Ukraine at an international meeting in Basel, Switzerland. VOA's Al Pessin has the story.
Secretary Kerry put the blame for the Ukraine crisis squarely on Russia, with his Russian counterpart sitting nearby. Kerry on Thursday accused Russia of providing weapons and other support to separatists in eastern Ukraine and violating the Minsk Protocol that it helped negotiate, which called for a ceasefire and other steps to end the crisis. Lavrov rejected criticism of Russia's behavior and said it supports the Minsk agreement. Lavrov says Russian military experts are working with the Ukrainian government to settle on a ceasefire line, which could lead to the withdrawal of heavy weapons by both sides. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it has shot down a Kenyan military plane returning from a combat mission in Somalia. Kenya says the plane crashed due to technical problems. The Kenyan military said the aircraft developed problems while returning from a mission in Jamame, southern Somalia, and crashed in the general area of Kismayo. A spokesman for al-Shabaab's military operations told the Reuters news service that the jihadist group shot down the plane with a missile. VOA's Somali service quotes witnesses in southern Somalia as saying the plane crashed in the village of Lafa Raga. They could not say what caused the plane to come down, and the fate of the pilots was not clear. A new survey shows that internet freedom has declined around the world for the fourth consecutive year, as a growing number of countries impose various forms of online censorship and monitoring practices. Zlatika Hoke has more.
The report, Freedom on the Net 2014, says that more than one half of the 65 nations studied have toughened their policies regarding filtering or censoring online content since May of 2013. Some governments also have expanded the types of electronic surveillance they conduct and ways to punish citizens whose online activities they deem unacceptable. Rights group Freedom House blames such actions for a global decline in internet freedom.
The most dramatic declines were in Russia, Turkey, and Ukraine. And then, similar to our findings in past years, the countries that really performed the worst out of the survey, again, are Iran, Syria, and China.
According to the report, this year also has seen a worldwide increase in arrests linked to internet activities. Internet users were tried not only for what they posted online, but in some cases also for content found on their electronic devices. Zlatica Hope, VOA News, Washington.
Thursday's scheduled launch of a new spacecraft that's intended to take U.S. astronauts back to the moon and beyond has been delayed for at least a day. A variety of problems halted the liftoff of the Orion capsule from the Cape Canaveral Launch Complex in the southeastern U.S. state of Florida. Those problems included a faulty rocket valve, wind speeds, and a boat that wandered into a restricted zone off the coast. NASA says the liftoff could be rescheduled for Friday. The unmanned spacecraft will make two orbits of the Earth at an altitude more than 14 times higher than the International Space Station. After its 4.5-hour flight, Orion will re-enter the Earth's atmosphere at a speed of 32,000 kilometers an hour before splashing down in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Baja, California. Well, that's a wrap of the World News for International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. If you'd like to reach me on Twitter, you can find me at Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N. Bye for now.
This is Business News on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. U.S. stocks ended lower Thursday after the European Central Bank president brushed off pressure for more immediate monetary policy action. But equities ended off their lows as he said the issue would be addressed early next year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell just over 16 points, or 0.09%, to end at 17,896. The S&P 500 losing almost 3 points to finish at 20,071. And the NASDAQ composite dropping as well. It ended at 47,69.
In Brussels, the European Union will give members the power to ban GMOs, also known as genetically modified crops. That was agreed to, that the national governments would have final say in the matter, though some initiatives had hoped that the EU would take a united stance. EU Food Safety Commissioner Vytenis Andriukaitis said that the decision allows member states can take into account national context and citizen views.
In Russia, Vladimir Putin stood his ground on geopolitical interests while also promising to pull the country from the brink of recession. Western sanctions, plummeting oil prices, and a devaluing ruble continued to cripple the Russian economy, but in his annual State of the Nation address, Putin specified the next 3 years as times of growth for Russia.
Another 200,000-plus jobs are expected to be added to the U.S. market. But while many new jobs are expected for the month of November, wages are not increasing at the same rate. In November, hourly wages are forecast to rise only 0.2%. In fact, hourly wages in the U.S. remain stagnant in order for the U.S. economy to return to normal. Higher wages will need to become apparent as well.
That's Business News on VOA Global. We'll be right back.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. Starbucks is coming out with something new. They are now, the fact that they're announcing it right now in Seattle and the West Coast, they're going to add beer, wine, and evening snacks to thousands of domestic cafes, widen their lunch offerings, and roll out mobile ordering. Now, this also means they're going to start bringing coffee trucks out on the street to various cities around the United States. We'll have more on this in another day. It's an interesting story. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. President Barack Obama has unveiled a new initiative aimed at helping Native American youth overcome poverty, substance abuse, and other challenges. He announced the plan Wednesday at the 6th Annual White House Tribal Nations Conference. In the cafe today, we visit the University of Wisconsin. Of the 43,000 students there, only 400 identify as American Indian. Like Native Americans in other schools, these students often feel cut off from their vibrant traditions, and some have difficulty adjusting to life on campus. Noah Phillips reports on efforts to encourage them to stay and graduate.
Upstairs from a dining hall on the first snowy evening of winter, four American Indian students at the University of Wisconsin in Madison drum and sing together at a feast for veterans. Drum rituals are an important part of Native culture, a valuable way for these students to keep a link to their traditions while living far away from their communities. This feast was organized by Nicole Boyd, who coordinates advising services for American Indian students on campus. She works to increase enrollment and retention among Natives at the school. The National Indian Education Association has the same goal on a nationwide level. NIEA Executive Director Anawake Rose agrees that the best way to retain Native students is by supporting them culturally throughout their entire academic careers.
What that means is they have dedicated staff and support systems that are in place that identify these students ahead of the curve. We know who they are as they're coming in. We're able to watch them and assist them across their years of college. And while other universities have done that at the onset to maybe increase recruitment, it's really the retention rates and making sure that these students stay to fulfill the promises that these universities started, which is what we're focused on right now.
The greatest factor discouraging Native students from staying at four-year colleges like UW-Madison, says Nicole Boyd, is a sense of alienation from their tribal communities.
Culture is such a vital part of life for Natives. There's a comfort level of just having your culture around you. We just need to figure out the way to recreate that.
Emily Nellis was one of those students aching for her community. The sophomore grew up on the Bad River Ojibwe Reservation in northern Wisconsin on the shore of Lake Superior. But when she was accepted to the University of Wisconsin with a full academic scholarship, she had to leave her home and move nearly 500 kilometers south to Madison.
At first, I hated it. I didn't want to be here. Like, I was actually really close to just giving up and actually returning home.
But Emily stayed, realizing that she had an opportunity to help her community prosper in the long run.
You know, growing up on the reservation, I noticed so much negativity and, you know, how it impacted families, how it impacted our people. You know, why are we having so much alcoholism, drug abuse, you know, teenage pregnancy, high school dropouts? Like, why is this happening? You know, I want to change this.
So Emily is majoring in social work with a minor in American Indian Studies. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is one of more than 100 American colleges that offer such a program. After attending graduate school, Emily plans to work on or near her reservation, perhaps through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Until then, she hopes to help welcome still more Native students to the UW campus. And Nicole Boyd plans to hold more events like the Veterans Feast and the UW-Madison Powwow, an Indian gathering and dance competition scheduled for this spring. For VOA News, this is Noah Phillips in Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Visit us on air and online at voanews.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Have you ever been cleaning your home and found something you thought was lost? Well, curators at the Penn Museum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, did that, and it turns out what they found was a 6,500-year-old skeleton. The skeleton was found around 1930 by famed British archaeologist Sir Leonard Woolley at Ur. You might know that as the home of the patriarch Abraham in southern Iraq. But because of budget cuts at the Penn Museum during the Depression, the skeleton's documentation was never finished, and it just sat in a crate in the basement for years. Dr. Janet Monge is the curator in charge of physical anthropology at the museum. She says the man from Ur was rediscovered when one of her colleagues was digitizing Woolley's field notes 2 years ago.
And that digitization project, of course, demanded that he go back through all of these detailed notes in the field. And then, of course, he sees, a skeleton came back here. You know, where is this? And then, of course, we made an appointment, went down into our storage area, opened up this crate, you know, which had been sitting there for a long time. I'd looked in the crate many times, you know, attempting to sort of figure out where this skeleton was from. We look at it together. It precisely matches the photographic images which were made in the field.
The skeleton is of a once well-muscled man about age 50. It was buried fully extended with his arms at his sides and his hands over his abdomen. Skeletons from the so-called Ubaid period are extremely rare. Dr. Monge says scientists hope studying the bones will help illuminate that time in human history.
Basically, it is at the coalescence of the first kind of villages or towns in that part of the world, which is, of course, known for its huge empires and cities later on. So it gives us insights into essentially what people were like and how they were living in this time frame, when rather than just wandering or moving around their environment as gathering and hunting or pastoralist people, they came to rely more on consistent resources in their environment, usually based on agriculture and domesticated animals, and began to live in these little villages.
The skeleton, which some curators have jokingly nicknamed Noah because it was found in a floodplain at the same time as the epic character, is about to undergo some serious modern study. Dr. Monge says they want to put the skeleton in a CAT scanner, take some DNA samples, and use chemical studies to find out what the mystery man ate.
And, of course, we would like to see the basic underlying structure of the bone, if he had breaks in his bones, or we can look at anything associated with disease or disease patterns. Ask some of our colleagues that work in ancient DNA to take a sample and see how it compares to the DNA of people who live in that part of the world today. Many of the archaeochemists, they're called, are able to look at isotopic signatures within the bone to try to determine what kinds of foods were present in the diet.
The digitization project that led to the skeleton's discovery came about because of the looting of the Iraq Museum in 2003. Dr. Janet Monge says the skeleton highlights the need to preserve antiquities for what they tell us about our common history.
I think that as with everything, and we could not just necessarily talk about this in terms of Iraq, but anywhere in the world, to educate the people to the importance, essentially, of the ancient peoples of that area and ancient history and what it means to the living people in those areas. It is a resource, okay, that is important, okay, for all peoples who are alive on the planet today. We share it, you know, basically as a commonality of human history. And once you get those sorts of points across to people, I think that they really then begin to understand, okay, that these have to be preserved in the best possible way.
The Penn Museum and the British Museum have joined forces to create a new web resource for people who want to learn more about the ancient city. Ur of the Chaldees, a vision of Woolley's excavations, is available at www.pennmuseum.com/sites/ur/project. So what do you think? Let us know your opinion on this story or anything else you hear on our program by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Robert Cordes, who lives outside of Detroit, Michigan, has filed a police report. Something has been stolen from his property, and whoever has it really cannot hide it in their pocket. It is a 5,000-pound footbridge stolen from his property in suburban Detroit. He said he wanted to use it in his catering business, but before he moved it, somebody else did, and he didn't see who took it.
This is Sports on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. Ross Fisher opened the 2015 European Golf Tour season in South Africa with a 6-under par 66, and he therefore leads the Nedbank Golf Challenge after Thursday's first round. The Englishman had 4 birdies on the front nine, 3 on the back. His only slip came with a bogey on number 16. He's 2 shots clear of a 3-way tie for second place.
Well, Seam had the shot of the day when he holed out with an 8-iron from the fairway for an eagle on the par 4, number 17, his ball taking a lucky kick off the right edge of the green to head back across the surface and into the cup. Won him a new red Volvo, a car. However, Seam is sponsored by Mercedes.
I'm not allowed to drive it anyways, so I give it to my mom. I wanted to buy a car for my mom after the good season I had this year, and she needs a new car. And, I said I'm going to buy one, and I think that's a pretty cool car she can drive.
Shouldn't say Volvo's a cool car when he sponsors Mercedes. Defending champion Thomas Bjorn is last after the opening round.
Well, even though Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer have yet to play in the new International Premier Tennis League, founder Mesa Buptai says that he's already made its presence felt. He'll be expanded next year. He said on Thursday, "We've achieved something out of the box here. It's very challenging. It's featuring past and present players, such as Andre Agassi, Serena Williams, Maria Sharapova, and Anna Ivanovic, in 4 teams, 4 countries in Asia and the Middle East. Interesting competition."
By all means. In the National Basketball Association, the Philadelphia 76ers and Minnesota Timberwolves were literally going in the wrong direction. The game between the two struggling teams had to be restarted 16 seconds after officials figured out that both teams were lined up and shooting at the wrong end of the floor. Now, all this ended Philadelphia's winless streak. They were 0-17, and they won the game. The first of the year for them, much to the relief of Philadelphia center forward Nerlens Noel.
You know, we've worked extremely hard, you know, through our practices and, you know, building up to this. And, you know, this is a different situation to be in, but I think our guys stayed close throughout this whole process. And, you know, I think we executed this whole game to get the W.
That's a look at sports on VOA.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're giving you the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending December 6th, 2014. The boys and girls play together nicely in this week's Top 5, as you'll soon discover. Let's start off in 5th place, where Taylor Swift falls 2 slots with Shake It Off. Taylor tours Australia next year, but fans in one city aren't happy. Hold on for details. Taylor Swift steps back 2 positions to number 5 with her former champ, Shake It Off. Next year, Taylor will tour Australia, but the city of Perth was left off the list. Promoter Michael Gudinski says it's all a matter of logistics. 3 days are needed to construct her outdoor sets, which didn't leave enough time to include the Western Australian city. Now, Perth got to host Taylor on her last tour, but Adelaide didn't. This time, the situation is reversed. Shake It Off, people. Holding in 4th place is Maroon 5, which later this month performs on a nationally televised awards show. Keep it here for details after Animals. Baby, I'm playing on you tonight. Hunt you down, eat you alive. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maybe you think that you can hide. I can smell yourself for miles. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maroon 5 spends another week in fourth place with Animals. On December 18th, Maroon 5 will perform at the first annual People Magazine Awards. Also hitting the stage will be 5 Seconds of Summer. I'm sensing a pattern here. Jumping into contention is a most unlikely pop hit, but I love it. Hozier rises 3 slots to 3rd place with Take Me to Church, and you'll learn more about him after the song.
Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine of your life. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life. Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine of your life. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life.
Hozier is your newcomer of the week, jumping 3 slots to 3rd place with Take Me to Church. Andrew Hozier Byrne is a 24-year-old singer from Ireland. Last year, he was still playing small gigs back home. Andrew says he recorded the vocals for Take Me to Church in his attic at 2 o'clock in the morning. The video for Take Me to Church went viral, and the song has sold more than 1 million copies here in the United States. He'll tour North America next February. Meghan Trainor stays put in 2nd place with All About That Bass. For her follow-up single, Meghan used social media superstars. Stay with me for more.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass.
Meghan Trainor holds in the runner-up slot with her 4 million seller, All About That Bass. Meghan's follow-up single, Lips Are Movin', is moving up the chart, aided by an eye-catching video. It's billed as the first-ever music clip created by social influencers. Stars from YouTube, Vine, and Instagram handled acting, choreography, makeup, set design, and other details. Taylor Swift is your countdown champion for a 2nd week with Blank Space. Is Taylor fighting for a movie role? I'll tell you after the song.
And I'll write your name.
Taylor Swift spends a 2nd week at 1 with Blank Space. Taylor reportedly wants to be in the upcoming movie The Secret in Their Eyes. It stars Nicole Kidman and Julia Roberts, who, word has it, would rather give the part to her niece, Emma Roberts. Who will get the part? Who will top the chart next week? Join me in 7 days and we'll try to get some answers. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
Most of us have heard about the Oxford English Dictionary. There's a free online version called OxfordDictionaries.com. And, you know, every year they add a few new words to this, Ira. Or phrases. And we've got a few new entries, including duckface, LOL cat, and man crush. Now, I know that's one you use all the time.
I don't use it much anymore, but duckface, what's duckface?
Duckface is defined as a noun meaning an exaggerated pouting expression in which the lips are thrust outwards.
Difficult to talk when you're doing
right.
It.
Typically, it's hard to tell when you're doing that. Typically made by the person posing for a photograph.
Now, here's one. It's cool beans. Now, people have been saying cool beans out in the Midwest for the last 50 years or so.
Yeah.
Hey, that's cool beans, man. No, that's like a 70s.
They just discovered it, apparently.
All right, how about digital footprint?
Yeah.
That's when you walk on the beach?
That's when you walk on a computer.
Digits of your toes, you know? No, that's not it, huh?
No, it's the information about a particular person that exists on the internet as a result of their online activity.
The 5-second rule. We pretty much have heard this because we go through it every day in our newsroom. it's a rule stating that food which has been dropped on the floor will still be uncontaminated with bacteria and therefore safe to eat if it's retrieved within 5 seconds.
Unless the mouse gets it first.
Speaking of
roll the credits, Ira.
Tracy Carter is our director, our technical director, Jackson Witt. And our managing editor, as always, is Diane Gao. Thank you for being with us. Join us again next week.
Have a great day.